Hi everyone, welcome to the FloridaProgressives.com podcast, episode 4 for May 16th, 2014. I'm Mike Gitson. This show delivers news and updates via interviews with activists around the state on the issues that you, the people of Florida, care about. This episode is about energy and the environment. As usual, listeners, stick around for the end of the show to hear the list of actions, groups, and resources discussed on the show that can help you affect positive change. I have two guests today. Kim Ross is the president and founder of Rethink Energy Florida, a nonprofit dedicated to engaging, educating, and empowering citizens to take action and achieve energy independence in a healthier, more sustainable environment. We'll be talking about what Rethink Energy Florida does, as well as their summer camps for kids called Energy Camp. Now, as an owner/member of EarthSteps, an environmental consulting firm, she also works as a program manager for the City of Tallahassee's Demand Side Management Program and manages the Sustainable Lead Building Division. I'll put more information about both those things at the end of the show. Brian Lee is a co-founder of Rethink Energy Florida and serves the organization as Director of Research and Policy. His Tallahassee Progressive Grassroots Consulting business works to provide professional campaign services to progressive candidates for office. He is running for Leon County Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor, Seat 4, with a carbon-neutral green campaign. Kim and Brian, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So for this interview, I want to start with some of the energy and environmental issues facing the state of Florida, and then we'll work outward to the specific work that the two of you do and the organizations you have founded. First up, hydrofracturing, commonly known as fracking. Drilling for natural gas is something that's been supported by both major political parties. But as we've seen time and time again, it's detrimental to our land, our air, our water. For any listeners out there that don't know much about the fracking process, can you describe it to them and critically where in Florida this is happening or possibly about to happen? I know this is one issue the two of you have kept a close eye on.
Absolutely. So the process of fracking is essentially usually pumping water, sand, and chemicals deep into the earth a couple of miles down, for the purpose of creating small fissures in a shale formation to get more natural gas and occasionally oil out of the formation.
Mm-hmm.
I say usually because the other thing that they do nowadays that's even more newer than hydraulic fracturing is acidic fracturing, where they leave out the water and they're just pumping acids and chemicals and sand for the same effect.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that. Okay.
So oil and gas companies refer to just that one little piece as fracturing or hydraulic fracturing rather than the larger process, the drilling, the cement casing, the departure of the water that they put into these wells at high pressures and acid and other fluids. All that, about half of it comes back up. And so that also is something that the industry doesn't call fracking, but it's obviously a very big part of that process. And that water is so bad that they can't even reuse it in other areas for fracking. It's just completely wasted.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, in addition to some of the issues around health that people are having related to fracking that live near the wells, in addition to that, one of the other big concerns is the amount of water that it uses. Because it uses a tremendous amount of water.
And the solution, by the way, for this wastewater is to inject that wastewater back into a wastewater well underground. They use the water and chemicals to frack. The water comes back up. Then they inject that same toxic mix back into the ground for storage.
Mm-hmm.
So there are issues that are being documented around the country that relate to spillages from that processed water that we're talking about, that relate to leaking of the cement casing and chemicals and methane getting into water. Anybody can Google faucet on fire and find images of methane that is actually in the water, and the owner of a home will set his faucet on fire, set the water on fire essentially, and you'll see a big poof because it's got so much methane and other chemicals in the water that are able to be set on fire.
Right.
So that's one of the issues. Also, in Oklahoma, they've documented at this point that the reason why Oklahoma is having so many earthquakes is related to fracking and related to this process that's kind of disturbing the base, the shale basin, but the base on which our you know, our geology is formed, our land is sitting. And so they've had some issues with earthquakes. We hear about earthquakes happening a lot more than just in California, where we used to hear about earthquakes happening.
Right. From what I read about it, it's like low-level earthquakes, but a lot of them in a sequence, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then again, you know, all these different health issues, people getting sick that live near the wells, people getting not being able to use their water, not even being able to bathe in their water.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all issues that are happening around fracking. In Florida, a lot of people don't think that Florida has anything to do with fracking, but actually it's a big concern. Our oil and gas laws on the books are 50 years old. They really haven't touched them for 50 years. And
wow.
So far, Florida Department of Environmental Protection's attitude toward permits that relate to fracking has been, well, it's just a form of drilling, so we will allow it. So there are 16 permits. At my last count, there were 16 permits down near the Naples area, where there's a basin, a shale basin called the Sunnyland Basin.
Okay.
That area already has drills going up. There has been a fight related in that area to not allow any fracking, and the folks from that area, specifically the Stone Crab Alliance and Preserve Our Paradise, they're kind of at ground zero, and they successfully got one of the permits in front of an administrative hearing judge who ordered DEP to allow an advisory committee to meet to provide a recommendation on whether or not that permit should go forward.
They ordered the DEP? Is that what you just said?
Yes, they ordered DEP to to convene a group called the Big Cypress Swamp Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And that group convened at the same time, actually, at the back-to-back meetings, that group convened, and then EPA had a hearing down there related to what Brian was talking about earlier, a Class 2 injection well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they, again, put that wastewater that we talked about earlier.
So that's the Naples area. Are there any other areas of Florida to be concerned about?
So that Naples, and there's three counties down there. There's Collier County, which is the area that's hottest right now. There's Lee County, and then there's Hendry County.
Okay.
And then also over in the Pensacola area, in the Jay area, there's a bit of a shale basin that's very large, that goes into other states, Alabama, Mississippi. That area is also an area to keep an eye out for. It's not active right now, but it's definitely something that, as this country, and as you said, the two major political parties are very much supportive of natural gas. They call it natural gas. They don't like to talk about fracking as much, but
right.
That's where we get at least 50% of our natural gas is from fracking. So as this country gets more and more addicted to natural gas, then it is definitely an area to keep in mind, that area over in Pensacola.
Okay, so there's a great summary of the dangers of fracking and how it's encroaching on Florida. What other environmental issues are on your radar in Florida or across the country? I saw on the Rethink Energy Florida website that Keystone XL pipeline is one concern. Also, advanced nuclear cost recovery. I know we don't have too much time to go into every environmental issue, but do either of you want to speak to one of those issues or a different one?
Sure. What happens with advanced nuclear cost recovery, it's a state policy that investor-owned utilities can charge their customers for the building and maintenance of nuclear power plants, whether or not the nuclear power plant ends up being built or repaired. And there have been a couple of issues recently where the nuclear power plant ended up being canceled or the repairs ended up being canceled. So it's a very, very important consumer issue, because any other investment, if you're investing in a company, then the people investing in the company should be taking the risk,
right?
Not the customers of the company. And the state of Florida has allowed the customers of the company, the consumers, the ratepayers, to take all of the risk with the Advanced Nuclear Cost Recovery Program. And consumers are getting screwed over with this program, and it just needs to stop. If nuclear power plants are such a risk that the investors aren't willing and able to put money into it, then it might be time to rethink using nuclear power.
All right, that's an excellent point. Okay, if there's nothing else, I'll go ahead and move on. I read in the Tallahassee Democrat that Rethink Energy Florida is, quote, dedicated to promoting awareness of fossil fuel dangers and the power of renewable energy options. It won't stop pushing until three things take shape. Every drop of oil cleaned up responsibly, place a permanent renewable energy policy on offshore oil drilling, and that there is a serious renewable energy policy in place that steers people away from oil dependence at every level of government. So I was quoting the Tallahassee Democrat there, but it reminded me that Rethink Energy Florida started as a response to the Deepwater Horizon BP Gulf oil spill. Kim, can you speak to why you founded Rethink Energy Florida, and Brian, your husband, co-founded it? Why the two of you decided to take that response after seeing all the damage in the Gulf of Mexico?
Sure, absolutely. Rethink Energy Florida actually came out of an organization, kind of a fluid organization called Crude Awakening Tallahassee. When the Deepwater Horizon disaster was going on, when the oil just kept spoiling into our wonderful Gulf, I looked around, I saw people feeling hopeless and helpless. We were being told there's really nothing you can do. The only thing you can do is go shop at your neighbor's stores in the Gulf and, support their businesses because they're having a hard time down there.
Right.
And, it took a lot of training to be able to get out there and clean up the oil and that sort of thing. And so people were just really helpless and hopeless. It was quite amazing. And I thought to myself, okay, so we can't clean up the oil, but there's got to be something that we can do. And so the thing that I kind of keyed in on was the idea that, we need to get off of fossil fuels. They're not drilling in the Gulf of Mexico because it's so inexpensive and that's the best place to drill, although it is the best place to drill now because we've used up all the low-hanging fruit, if you will. We've already drilled in the places where oil is easy to get at.
On land,
and right. Yeah. So now they're headed into the Gulf. They're headed into the tar sands of Alberta. They're doing things that are much more difficult. And one of the reasons why is because we as a country are still addicted to oil and to fossil fuels. So the overall solution is actually to get onto renewable energy and off of fossil fuels. So we started out as being advocates and activists as Crude Awakening Tallahassee and really got a lot of the community in the state rallied around the idea of getting a permanent moratorium on offshore oil drilling onto the 2010 ballot. Mm-hmm. And getting Charlie Crist to call a special session. So we did a lot of letter writing, we had rallies, and as a result, Charlie Crist actually did call that special session. Now, the special session didn't go as we wanted it to, but that was always kind of a small battle in the overall scheme of things. After that effort kind of was coming to a close with the special session over, and that was around the same time that the Deepwater Horizon, or that the plug was actually, working and the oil had
right.
stopped.
After all, I remember they tried so many other options and they all failed while it was just gushing at the bottom of the Gulf. But yeah,
yes.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I just remember it vividly.
Yeah. And, I'm starting to meet children who don't remember now. So
yeah,
it's definitely something to keep in mind because that's something that really kind of spurs us on and spurred us into action with Rethink Energy. So we're a nonprofit, but we don't shy away from doing advocacy. We do a lot of education because education and engaging citizens is really what we need to do in order to make a change. We need to make changes in our personal lives, and we need to make changes in our policy at every level of government. While those three items, every drop of oil cleaned up responsibly, a permanent renewable energy policy, and a ban on offshore oil drilling and other forms of fossil fuels, some of those are pie in the sky, especially the every drop of oil cleaned up responsibly. They haven't done that in the Exxon Valdez case, right? There's still oil.
Mm-hmm.
So those are pie in the sky, but that foundation of, hey, you know what, this is really important and we need to keep these things in mind. We need to keep these lessons in mind and actually let it instruct us on how we move forward and where we're focused. And we need to make sure that we're focused on renewable energy.
And for some of the listeners out there that might not be too familiar with renewable energy, non-fossil fuel energy, can you describe, Kim or Brian, some of the types of alternative energy out there that is ready to be used?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Florida is the sunshine state, and we should be heavily, heavily utilizing solar. And the solar technology that's available today is not Jimmy Carter's solar energy. We've got photovoltaic cells that are far more efficient than they ever were in the past, and they're getting more and more efficient every year. Per kilowatt hour, right now, solar is cheaper than fossil fuels if you take into account the externalities that fossil fuels generate. You're not paying the full price at the pump when you buy gasoline. When you buy gasoline, you're paying part of the price at the pump, but you're also paying a lot of money for fossil fuels in the form of tax subsidies to the petrochemical industry and the utilization of the United States military in protecting our energy sources overseas. And additionally, externalities include the pollution caused by oil spills. When people say that oil is more efficient than solar or wind, they're not taking into account that, well, an oil rig blows up and then they have to send a robot down to fix it, and then the robot doesn't work and they have to send another robot down to fix it, and then that doesn't work and they have to send other things down to plug it up. They don't talk about that when they talk about energy efficiency. They just talk about the energy generated simply by burning the fossil fuel itself. Other innovations in solar energy include concentrated solar. Another talking point that people love to say when you talk about solar is, well, solar doesn't work at night. And that's not true anymore. Solar energy generates electricity at night when you're using concentrated solar. With concentrated solar, the solar rays are directed towards tubing containing a saline solution that becomes superheated and circulates through a system that runs turbines, and that fluid gets so hot that it continues running those turbines overnight. So solar energy works at night now. There's also wind energy, and people will dismiss wind energy saying, oh, well, it kills birds. But of course, if you look at the real statistics about what kills birds, far, far higher percentage are killed by air pollution and by flying into the very large buildings that make up the infrastructure for fossil fuel and nuclear energy.
Okay. Kim, earlier you're talking about how so much of what Rethink Energy Florida does is about educating and kind of keeping future generations informed. So can you tell me a little bit about something that Rethink Energy Florida does called Energy Camp?
Absolutely. Energy Camp is my favorite time of year, because children are spectacular, and this is a Energy Camp is designed for kids that are in third through sixth grade, and kids really get it. We spend the first half of the first day of Energy Camp talking about the problems, and then we spend the entire rest of what is now a two-week series talking about all the solutions and all the different ways that kids can have a positive impact on our energy usage and on renewable and going toward renewable energy. They absolutely get it. And everything we do is very hands-on. So rather than, we don't have a series of lectures. We have, hey, let's put this little solar bug together, and the solar bug will vibrate when the sun's out. And, you know, we take field trips to see local gardens so that we can talk about the connection between our food and energy, which is, there's a very big connection there. And so these kids just, they're fantastic. They get it. They are very quickly like, okay, I get it. Just tell me, what can we do about it? And then they get their power. A lot of my time with adults is spent reminding them that, hey, you know, we still live in a democracy. We still can talk to our leaders and our folks that are making decisions. But kids get that they're powerful. And the ideas that come from them are things that I've never heard an adult say. You know, we also go into schools during the school year and just do presentations. And I remember I gave a presentation last fall, and this young man who's in sixth grade, you know, and he's kind of even small for his age. So he raises his hands and he says, well, I think if I we could create a wind powered car by connecting this, you know, getting a little windmill on the back of the car, and we can connect the electrodes this way. And, you know, we can connect the wires and I'm like, well, dude, that's why I'm talking to you, because you guys are the ones with the ideas. You got the creativity, and nobody's told you you can't do what's in your mind, and that's why we need you.
That's borderless. I mean, speaking as a parent and a citizen and someone in experience with the public school system, I'm so happy to hear that, because, you know, there are some parts of the country where even if you bring up climate change as a teacher, it's considered controversial. So in some ways, it's sad when you think about it. Sometimes we've slid backwards environmental education-wise. So it's always good to hear environmental education programs out there. That's fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'd be remiss in discussing Energy Camp if we didn't bring up the Energy Ball, which I'm going to give a brief plug for and I hope makes the edit.
Oh, absolutely.
Energy Ball is a fundraiser. It's our big fundraiser every year. This will be our third annual Energy Ball. It's going to feature some great music, some great food, and a silent auction. And part of the proceeds from this go towards funding scholarships for Energy Camp, because organizationally our philosophy is that no child should miss out on this educational opportunity because of their family's financial situation. So we end up with a full camp where most of the students are on a partial or full scholarship, and we work very hard leading up to the Energy Ball to make sure that we raise that money so that these kids can go to this camp. So that's going to be June 20th. For our Leon County listeners, it's going to be at the Women's Club in Midtown. And get in touch with us for tickets.
And they are co-sponsors of the event.
And they are co-sponsors of the event, yes.
No, I don't mind plugs like that at all. I hope that people share the transcript and the audio for this podcast. And, you know, it's timely, like you said, in June. Okay, well, moving on, I wanted to ask a question for Brian. You do consulting work of a sort through your business, which is Tallahassee Progressive Grassroots Consulting. You provide campaign services. You are also running as a candidate yourself. What's the seat that you are running for, and what are the issues in the race?
Well, I'm running for Leon Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor Seat 4. Leon County voters, after you vote for governor and commissioner of agriculture and county commission and city commission and dog catcher, and you get all the way down to the bottom of the ballot, that's the Leon Soil and Water Conservation District race. And the Soil and Water Conservation District boards were formed during the FDR administration, during the Dust Bowl crisis, as a way of educating farmers about how to avoid soil erosion and how to use good agricultural practices. Since then, they've morphed into a lot of different things. The Leon County Soil and Water Conservation District Board has a fairly narrow scope, and we educate and advocate. So we educate about soil and water conservation, and we advocate to local government and state government that they help to encourage these practices. As far as my campaign itself goes, I'm running a carbon neutral green campaign. I'm going to be one of very few candidates for office anywhere that you're going to hear about that does not use yard signs. Every election cycle, every candidate puts a couple hundred thousand square feet of polyurethane into the landfill. I cannot, in clear conscience, as a soil and water conservation supervisor, run a campaign that puts a bunch of plastic into the landfill. So I'm going to be running a little bit of a different from usual campaign. It's going to be clean and green. I'm going to be using printers for my printed materials that use sustainable printing practices. I'm going to be bicycling to take my campaign checks to the bank whenever possible. And whenever that's not feasible, I'm going to be donating part of my campaign proceeds to what's called the Community Carbon Fund here in Leon County, which is an organization. It's sort of like a papal indulgence. They make up for your carbon usage by funding other good environmental practices.
But here in town, too, that's the nice thing about there's lots of those types of offsets, but the Community Carbon Fund is really nice in that you can see the specific things that are done for local nonprofits here in Tallahassee.
All right. A lot of the work that both of you do is right in Tallahassee, where the Capitol is, where the legislature works. What kind of impressions do you get from lawmakers? I mean, Kim, you also have Earth Steps, which we didn't go too far into. That's your environmental consulting firm. So, and Brian, you have your grassroots consulting business. What kind of impressions do you get from lawmakers about their concerns for the environment? Is it really a concern for them overall at all, do you think?
You know, it depends on who you talk to. Here, the folks, you're right, we're based in Tallahassee and we're in the process of expanding. The folks that are here, both on a local level and our representatives in the state legislature, are very positive. They're doing what they can. They're trying to move energy, renewable energy issues forward. And I don't think that that's entirely an accident. They're all good people. But I think that the fact that we're here and we are encouraging, again, we're grassroots encouraging people, other people, not just us, to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that says something, which is part of why we're expanding to be statewide, part of why we're looking for other chapters and other groups that we can ally with statewide, because we need more people calling their legislators and saying, hey, this is a concern for me. Florida's, you know, in the brunt of climate change, and we need to be doing something now. So it really does depend on who you talk to. You know, we've got some great representatives and senators out there. We've got Senator Bullard and Senator Soto are looking at how they can address the fracking issue next year with some sort of a moratorium and making sure that our state laws are updated so that there is no further excuse on why, you know, we may as well drill because state law says that we can drill. And right now we have a void. And our laws related to fracking. So Senator Soto and Bullard, they'll talk climate change and they'll talk energy issues. Honestly, there's not a lot of folks that are concerned about it. The unfortunate thing, this was not caught on tape, but we were at an event where our senators and representatives passed a resolution to send a letter to President Obama to tell them that Florida is in favor of the Keystone XL pipeline. So we went just to make sure that we were on camera holding signs, you know, saying not all of Florida.
Yeah.
If you guys did that, that doesn't mean that you're actually representing the way Floridians feel. At that press conference, off camera, somebody asked the chairperson of the Energy Committee, you know, aren't they concerned about peak oil, which is what we talked about earlier, that oil is just more and more expensive and at some point will be really too expensive to extract from the ground. And, you know, it was created over millions of years. So,
Or that we would literally run out.
Right. Well, unfortunately, the chairperson of the Energy Committee said, well, we're not going to run out of oil. God's going to replace it.
Oh.
That was his response. You know, and I do wish that we had caught that on camera because I really think that people ought to be concerned about science and or the lack thereof being what guides our leaders.
And it begs the question, of course, if God's going to be producing more oil for us, why do we need a Keystone XL pipeline? Why doesn't he just put it in big bins right next to the refineries? But it also accentuates the need for people, for progressives, for environmentalists to speak loud and often to their legislators. One of the things that we tell the interns in our organization is we don't want you just to know the names of your state legislators and your city and county commission members. We want them to know your name. We want the government officials, the public servants that are making these decisions to, when they hear that someone from Rethink Energy Florida is coming into their office, we want them a little worried. We want them on their game. We want them to know what the heck they're talking about. Because really, the petrochemical industry has a multi-billion dollar public relations industry and lobbying industry that miseducates and misinforms citizens and legislators about the alleged benefits of fossil fuel and about the alleged risks of renewable energy. So the more people that are properly educated about the benefits of renewable energy and the risks and dangers of fossil fuel use, the better. And the more those people go and talk to their legislator and properly educate them on these issues, the better.
Okay. Kim and Brian, it's great news that your organizations are expanding. Thank you for being good stewards of the environment, and thanks for talking to me today.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for covering this important issue.
And now resources and calls to action. All of these will be at the bottom of the transcript, so follow the link on this post at floridaprogressives.com. Energy Camp is available for kids 3rd grade through 6th grade. One camp starts July 21st, the second camp starts July 28th. Find more information at rethinkenergyflorida.org. They also have more information there about the Energy Ball, which is the fundraiser. You can help fund Energy Camp so that the kids can attend regardless of their parents' financial situation. The Energy Ball will be June 20th at 7 o'clock at the GFWC Women's Club of Tallahassee. Rethink Energy Florida is also on Facebook, as are its founder, Kim Ross, and co-founder Brian Lee. If you want to get involved with their efforts, go to rethinkenergyflorida.org for internship opportunities and other ways to help. Kim's environmental consulting firm, Earth Steps, can be found at earthsteps.org. Through that, she is managing the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, LEED, building division for the city of Tallahassee. Best of luck to Brian and his race for the Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor Seat 4. You can find more information about his campaign by searching for it on Facebook. Kim praised Senator Dwight Bullard and Senator Darren Soto. Check floridaprogressives.com for more info on them. Send them thank you notes for their service and contribute your time and money to their campaigns when they're up for re-election. More on fracking can be found at ProPublica and The Guardian, with links, you guessed it, in the transcript. As Kim said, there are two groups at Ground Zero in the Naples area trying to stop fracking. They are the Stone Crab Alliance at stonecraballiance.com and Preserve Our Paradise at preserveourparadise.org. I've also included links to Wikipedia entries to some of the technical scientific stuff in this podcast, including photovoltaic system, kilowatt hour, petrochemical, concentrated solar power, peak oil. Also, the history of the soil and water conservation programs, more information on the Keystone XL pipeline. We as Americans need to educate ourselves on terms such as these if we're ever going to get serious about the switch to renewable energy. Advanced nuclear cost recovery is the same thing you may have heard about in episode 2 of this podcast, the thing that the folks at Progress Florida call the nuclear tax. More information is at stopnuclear.com. Florida Progressives is the home to this podcast. Episode 5 should be out Friday, May 23rd. The music is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Look for the Facebook fan page by searching for the FloridaProgressives.com podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Idson, last name spelled E-I-D-S-O-N, and you can send me an email at Michael.C.Idson@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.